Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Hello and welcome back to the Inside Lacrosse PLL Happy Hour Podcast. We've got a special one here for you guys. It's Kevin Brown here with Dan Kaplan. We're getting primed and ready for the PLL Championship on September 21st in Chester, Pennsylvania, in and around near Philadelphia at Subaru Park, where the Philadelphia Unions play. Dan Kaplan, how are we doing?
Doing great. I'm fired up to be here with you. Even more fired up to have Coach Copeland with us. And you know me, I'm ready to talk some ball.
Coach, cat's out of the bag. Dan Kaplan just revealed it. Our first guest of the podcast, reigning champion coach of the Water Dogs. Coach Copeland, how you doing?
Well, I'm honored. To be your first guest here. So appreciate you looping me in, man. Always fun to talk some lacrosse with you guys. So let's have at it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Just start right there. Just what are the initial thoughts of this chance to repeat, become the fourth or fifth, depending on how you look at it, the pro field lacrosse team to ever do what you guys are about to set out to do and aim for back-to-back championships here?
Our guys deserve a lot of credit. I told them post-game winning a single championship. I can tell you how hard that was to get done last year. And you kind of go through the ebbs and the flows of a season and with the hope that you're healthy and playing your best down the stretch. And, you know, we just everything lined up appropriately and we were able to get that done last year. And then the challenge going into this year was one, trying to retain everybody. Obviously had a couple of retirements into Napoli and Brown, and then, you know, a little bit of free agency, you know, moves with Caraway, and had to navigate a collegiate draft and kind of figure out ultimately what your new look Water Dog roster would look like. But to honestly just like mentally have the maturity and the professionalism to just reset yourselves and go through the entire process and the entire journey all over again in hopes that you'd be back in Philadelphia with a chance to go back to back. They deserve, you know, so much credit for really getting to this point. And, you know, we understand kind of what's at stake and how hard it's going to be to win, you know, a second championship year. But our guys are awfully excited for the opportunity. So fun to be playing on the final weekend of the year, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's always the goal, right? Playing on the last weekend of the season. So, Coach, for you, I feel like this year with a lot of, you know, the revamp of the Cannons and just teams in general, there's been so much talk about, like, camaraderie in locker rooms, and you know the way that manifests in the PLL is such a big deal for you. What's that been like to kind of watch that as the Water Dogs kind of like mesh in that locker room, kind of comes together, you know, with each week together?
It's been awesome. I love our guys. I think they know that, but you know, part of why I love them is because they love each other, and it's like so visible and so clear to see that on a week to week basis, and just, you know, them, the amount of work that they're kind of willing to put in kind of behind the scenes, and just how diligent they are with their preparation, and then how much fun they have together and how much fun they have competing alongside each other. And, you know, obviously winning certainly beats the alternative, but even when you lose, but you have the locker room right, it just makes those moments, just easier to kind of handle and to navigate. So, I don't know. I'm really proud of the locker room that we've assembled. I mean, you look at a guy like Mikey Schlosser, he hasn't, you know, logged a minute this year, but he's on the sidelines of, you know, kind of these games in the back half of the season. He'll certainly be there a week from Sunday. And I just think that's a little bit of a microcosm as to kind of the culture that we've created within the Water Dogs locker room. So yeah, very, very proud of this group.
And then just as an extension of that, like, I feel like your guys, like, it creates this, like, you mentioned sacrifice and like throughout the week, it's such a weird element. I feel like with, you know, no practice time or very limited practice time, I should say, when you say those sacrifices and like what those guys are doing, what do you mean? Like, what does that film work? Is that them like recovery? Like, what does the kind of week look like for them and how they go out preparing for your guys?
Yeah, I just think they make this Water Dogs team a priority in their lives. And, you know, we certainly do the same thing that other teams do and have some weekly Zoom calls. And you spend a lot of time just chopping it up and kind of in your preparation and your kind of game plan and strategy sessions, just because you want everybody to certainly be comfortable with the plan and be on the same page. But beyond that, it's also just how diligent they are with their PT, with their, you know, strength and conditioning and cardio. And a lot of these guys went from indoor to outdoor. A number of them, at least on our team in particular, played in Worlds. Some guys came out of Worlds a little bit dinged up. When you ask other guys to kind of step up, they were ready and prepared to do so. And you know, these seasons, you know, I say it all the time, but they never go in a straight line. So you need to have some flexibility and kind of be nimble with your roster construction, but we've never been a group that makes excuses when things don't go our way. It's just next man up and go to work and prepare just as hard and be diligent with your film study and really just try to go all in on you know, the next opponent, whoever that may be. And that's kind of been, I mean, I know it probably sounds a little coach speak and kind of simplistic, but that's honestly how we roll. And I you know, the guys have bought into that very well. Again, just, I don't know, 9-3 right now. I mean, that's pretty cool. So 9-3 with a chance at another championship is yeah, it's a fun place to be.
The ascent your club has had just ever since the beginning, right? Since that bubble season, you guys struggle out of the gates. You pick up Sowers a couple years later. He's been phenomenal through injuries. This is his most fully healthy season. But just to backtrack on, I'm not going to make you a comment on this coach, but the sentiment of what Dan was getting at with just how close his locker room is, right, and the chemistry in there. It was just funny to see that the end of Cannon sequence at the end of that semifinal where I don't know how you blew the turnaround team of the century out like that, team of the year like that, but you did. And just seeing the chirping from your sideline, a couple of your guys, your boys saying, "Hey, enjoy your end of season awards, guys. We're gonna go play for a championship." Just that was funny to see, and it's something we expressed last podcast out with Michael Sowers coming on the pod. But third question here, coming into to Archers here, what are your thoughts matching up with one, the number one seed? And two, just a team that's kind of been on a tear all season, but the two meetings you've had in the regular season were just instant classics. I mean, that regular season finale was something else with the way you guys pulled that one out.
Yeah, well, I'll backtrack a little bit. I mean, first of all, I want to give the Cannons a ton of credit. They had an unbelievable year. Coach Holman, I mean, he and I were actually texting the day after the game, and he obviously has his fingerprints all over that turnaround. So I got a ton of respect for those guys. I have a ton of respect for Kyle Hartzell and kind of the career that he had. So sometimes there are just like emotional flare ups during the course of this thing, and that happens, you know, and as long as you can kind of keep your focus on kind of the ultimate prize and kind of what's at stake, I think, you know, some of that stuff, it just happens. I don't kind of read too far into it beyond that. But, you know, I think any coach wants their guys to come, you know, take their teammates' backs when you feel like it's appropriate. And I feel like that's kind of a little bit of what you saw there. So proud of the guys.
It was a good shirt, too.
Yeah. We got some colorful personalities, man. I think you probably know that about our locker room by now. But then to fast forward to your next question about just what to expect from the Archers. I mean, these guys are awesome, right? I mean, Tom Schreiber, league MVP. I mean, Graham Hossack, one of the best defensemen in the world. Brett Dobson, one of the best goalies in the world. You know, I mean, I know you kind of touched on it that we didn't have a lot of kind of postseason nominees for some of this all league stuff, and we're okay with that. We don't really get too high or too low with that kind of stuff. But I guess the point I'm trying to make is these guys have a lot of award winners, and rightfully so. They're the real deal. So. They know us. We know them. Two previous contests with those guys, winning side of one, losing side of one, both one-goal games. You know, Coach Batesy and Coach Resch and Coach Cav, I think, do an unbelievable job. Batesy just is one of the brightest offensive minds in the game. I think, you know, Coach Resch probably on like the Mount Rushmore of defensive minds. And then I've kind of said it publicly before. I think Coach Gav does as good of a job as anybody in the league in terms of just kind of some of their substitution strategy and tactics. So we understand what we're up against. But again, it's like I mentioned before that we're 9-3. I think they're 9-2. Like, throw out those records. Like, this is about who plays better over the course of a 48-minute lacrosse game about whatever it is, 11, 12 days from now. So that's going to kind of be both teams' focus. And, hopefully you have another entertaining game. And, you know, obviously from my end, hopefully the Dogs come out on top here. But a lot that needs to go into that before we get to that point.
And I have, as you could imagine, about a million questions about matchups and how you guys are going to try and work to defend the Archers and all that type of stuff. But before we go ahead and get all the way into that, I do have one question looking back on that semifinal game with the Cannons. I thought Ben Randall did an incredible job on Asher Nolting. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, that matchup, what you guys thought going into it, and then how that kind of played out throughout 48 minutes?
Benny's been kind of our quote unquote number one defenseman, really ever since we grabbed him, you know, in the entry draft, where I think he fell to like number 20. We got him in the third round, and he's made us look pretty bright for that pick there. But he's awesome. I mean, we had a plan, you know, obviously for their whole offense, but for Asher in particular, who we just felt like, I think I use the term, he kind of stirs the drink for them offensively. I thought he just had an awesome year where he turned the ball over with far less frequency, was really well balanced between, you know, goal scoring and feeding. He kind of made him go. So, if there were ways for us to try to limit his touches, we thought, you know, that could be a decent little strategy, and then kind of force him into certain parts of the field. And if we had to slide to him when he kind of posts up and gets to his spots, we were willing to slide to him there too. But, we had a game plan that I thought the guys really bought into. I thought, you know, you kind of saw it come to fruition, and it was probably the most complete game that we played all year. So proud of that effort, proud to still be playing. But again, you know, kind of a, I don't know, you know, I'm sure Coach Bates would say the same thing, like a fun, I don't want to say lopsided, semifinal performance. Like, it kind of feels good to not have the stress of being in a one goal game in the fourth quarter, but at the end of the day, it doesn't guarantee anything a couple weeks from now. So, again, we're kind of going all in here to championship weekend, but yeah, that was a fun performance by the Dogs for sure.
And from like a principal standpoint, you mentioned like when Nolting was getting to spots and posting up, you guys were comfortable sliding and going and supporting. I feel like in the PLL, some teams, right? Like, it's, they hesitate or they're slow to go, as it's a last resort, right? I feel like you guys schematically and principle-wise are really comfortable supporting and going and sliding. What was that decision-making process like? And like, why did you guys arrive at that as kind of a identity?
I guess it's just like a reactionary thing. I don't know if that's our straight up identity, like initially out of the gate. I feel like we're kind of a slide when you have to team or slide to certain matchups team. If you think guys are slow to get the ball out of their sticks, maybe you go. If you feel like guys just are physically imposing and they can kind of get the spots, then you have to be ready to go. You know, we have some pick strategy and some two-man game strategy defensively that you know, we want to make sure that we execute on, because both of those things are just huge part of kind of PLL offenses. So, we have kind of systems that we believe in. Again, we're a coaching staff that makes it very collaborative. I really value the opinion of all of our guys. We certainly value the opinion of Dylan Ward, who's just, you know, he's been around the game, indoor, outdoor, professional level, world team level. He's done it, and he's won virtually at every single level. So he's obviously a guy that we care about his feedback, and we want it to be collaborative, and we want the guys to be very comfortable. But I just think right now, between, you know, kind of Randall and Sabia, who are arguably both number one cover guys, and then Bernsey, who's a very serviceable cover guy, but he also is really, really, really smart and instinctive off the ball. We just feel like those guys have a pretty nice chemistry, and, you know, they've been playing together for you know, really a couple years now. So you just try to lean into that that experience. And I think we've gotten really good D-middy play too, certainly as of late. And we made the decision to dress four D-mids, and those guys have a nice little chemistry about them too. And, you know, I think they also give us a little something, something in transition. So that's just kind of who we are defensively, you know, nothing really earth shattering. I think it's just, been around, have some experience playing together. And then obviously, you know, Wardo gives them a lot of confidence.
Hey, you're talking to the leader of the Matt Witcher fan club here. So it's preaching to the choir in terms of
Kevin's actually talking about himself. He doesn't even mean me right now.
Which is the best? Well, I'm sure you guys probably feel the same way, but I kind of mentioned maybe the lack of love for the Water Dogs and some of the postseason accolades or nominees, but Witchie's a guy that I haven't yet talked about, but in my opinion, he's absolutely one of the best short sticks in the league right now. I think if he keeps it up, I think I could make a real argument that he deserves a serious look with Team USA. He's just playing at a whole another level, and just like an awesome person to boot. So he's the man. I am also a very staunch supporter of the Matt Witcher fan club here. So throw me in that
category. Classic right around the corner after the PLL season. So we'll see what the USA roster looks like. But Coach, you've been among the leaders, if not the leader, among innovation around the face-off stripe this season in terms of the new 32-second shot clock that follows. Whether it's the prevent face-off strategy or last week in the semifinals, we saw you pull out the, and correct me if I'm wrong, if it was not the first time in the season, but the fling it into the corner and let them clear it on a 32-second shot clock. Just what's it been like coming up with these innovative kind of strategies against some of these teams that you match up against every week?
Yeah, I think when you really unpack the face-off thing, I think there's so much strategy and so much nuance to it. We're fortunate that we have both, you know, Eli Gobrek and Zach Currier who have face-off experience, both from, you know, kind of the NLL and their indoor experiences, but Zach all the way back to his Princeton days. So we kind of knew that we had a roster that might be able to take advantage and be a little bit creative here. I think some of it is you look at kind of offensive and defensive efficiencies, 32-second shot clock versus 52-second shot clock, and maybe some subtle differences there. Some of it is making sure that you're kind of not giving up transition. I think when we ultimately did this, I think it was game three against the Atlas when we went down nice and early. We kind of had James Riley, who we absolutely love, the fellow recently out of Georgetown, but, you know, Trevor had his number a little bit, and it wasn't just like, it wasn't just Trevor winning faceoffs. Like Trevor was kind of like forcing us to keep James on defense and play through pick situations and a lot of that kind of stuff. And we just felt like we were getting a little bit exposed. So felt like, all right, like let's just get some defensive personnel out there. Let's play defense first with a little bit of a short clock and hopefully play with a 52-second shot clock if we can go ahead and get stops. Now, obviously, it's not perfect. If you're giving up goals in the short clock and it can kind of turn into make it, take it, it can spiral out of control a little bit. And I think ultimately that's what happened against us in Archer's round one. So, we've kind of evolved as the year has worn on. I think you've seen Currier take more faceoffs than he did, you know, when we first started this strategy. And I feel like we just kind of have a little bit of a yin and yang. And then, you know, within that, we want to manage, you know, the various situations accordingly. And I'm not advocating for it to turn into hockey and just to keep the ball on the ground and kind of keep goosing it to certain spots on the field. I'm not in love with that strategy. But at the end of the day, teams at this stage of the season are going to do and employ whatever strategies they think are going to put them in the best position to win ball games. So that's what it's all about. But it's just been something that, yeah, we've taken on. And once we've kind of committed to it, we certainly really haven't looked back at all.
I mentioned earlier that I was going to get into some Archer's questions here. So I hope you're ready for that.
Fire them away.
Perfect. So I guess for the first one, you mentioned Coach Resch defensively. You mentioned, Graham Hossick, and, that's a really stout group over there on that side of the ball. Scored a lot of goals in early offense and transition last week in the semifinals. I'm going to assume that those aren't going to come the same way here in the championship, so we're going to be looking at a lot of six-on-six type of goals. Is there anything that you're willing to tip your cap and say, like, we like our matchups here or there, or something that is going to be a, you know, a new look for the Water Dogs here come championship day?
I mean, I think both teams might be holding on to a couple things that they haven't shown yet, whether those are set pieces out of timeouts or kind of various strategies. But you also, I don't think either group's really going to make the mistake of trying to reinvent themselves at this stage of the season. I think you kind of, like, what we know who we are, they know who they are. Each team kind of has their kind of DNAs, and you just try to do what you do maybe a little bit better than your opponent. So I don't really see us getting away from kind of who we try to be between the arcs and trying to push transition when and if it's there. Obviously, I'm sure those guys are trying to make it a focal point for them too. You know, the first game was just high scoring. It was ridiculous. I feel like at halftime we were on pace to have like a 30-28 kind of ball game, and then it slowed down a little bit there in the second half. I do think an interesting storyline is that you have two Team Canada goalies kind of in between the pipes at each end. Those guys have familiarity with each other, but those guys are also, in my opinion, two of the best in the world. So that's going to be a big one. We have so much respect for those guys. I think they're playing a couple rookies kind of in short stick roles, but those rookies don't look like rookies to me. They're they're the real deal. So I give Batesy and staff a lot of credit for kind of the draft that they had. You know, obviously people have their kind of eye on this Connor Fields thing and his injury and ultimately what that may look like a week and a half from now. But, I don't know that this is going to be a game where you're going to see too much gimmicky stuff. I think it's going to be just two really good lacrosse teams, and whoever plays better is going to take this thing home.
Just you mentioned the game between the arcs. Is that really where you find your team identity from, and is focusing on beating the opposition in the game between the arcs there?
It's something that we've made clear since we tried to build this thing. Yeah, we want to try to run from defense to offense. We want to try to maybe take advantage of getting guys trapped or having somewhat favorable matchups at times. You know, I look at a guy like Christian Scarpello, like, you know, when he was at Rutgers, you know, with, I guess, Christian Mazzone, that was really the first time you heard of this, like, NASCAR stuff that teams were really trying to kind of take on at the collegiate level. But Scarps is so comfortable in those roles. You know, we've talked about Witchy already, but Witchy's a very underrated offensive player. I just see his shooting stroke and kind of pregame practices, and he can pull it pretty good. You know, Rylan Reese obviously is a two-point threat. So some of it just fits our personnel, but it's also with these short shot clocks, you know, just relying on half field sets. You know, I'm of the opinion that isn't necessarily, you know, a consistent winning formula. I think you have to try to go ahead and get production elsewhere.
And just keeping this between the arcs kind of theme going, you also mentioned Coach Cav and his ability to get them going with sub games and all that type of stuff. What's the key to defending those? Like, what will be the message to making sure that we're not, that the Water Dogs aren't giving up anything in transition there or through the box?
You just can't get sloppy. I mean, there's some creativity there, but I just like, if you know, those guys are fast, and I think these guys maybe cut off ball harder than most teams in the league. So if you just kind of like rest and relax, and if you're just kind of on your heels, like they really can hurt you there. I think the first game, I thought, you know, they did a nice job of starting LeClaire kind of on their defensive end and then holding Sisselberger back. I think LeClaire ends up getting a two. It's just like a very like subtle subbing strategy, but they kind of know who their shooters are, who their 2-point threats are. You got to just make sure that, you just do a really good job there in the open field, because these guys with space is a problem.
Coach, the camera access between the end of game timeouts and the play calling, and between that and your innovative face-off strategies, a lot of fans have been up in arms. How is Copeland not up for Coach of the Year? And it's to your credit of not really caring about the end of season awards, but between both Archers games, I think are good examples of drawing up real good out of timeout plays, right? The Sowers dish to Courier, and you mentioned the goalie battle Dauber post game talked about how he kind of read that one from Courier on the riser, I remember, and then the end of game timeout coming in the regular season finale against the Archers was just absolutely bonkers, bringing Rylan Reese out of the box. Now, Michael Sowers told us that was actually Connor Kelly's idea. Can you confirm and tell us just a little bit about your approach to kind of bringing the huddle together and ending at a final decision for these out of timeout plays?
Yeah. So we I said it before, we certainly are collaborative. I'm going to listen to our guys, when I think it makes sense, and ultimately it's appropriate. I think, we try to have not too many voices in the huddle. I think that's sometimes where this stuff can become like a little bit messy. But we also try to prepare for all of these situations and scenarios in some of our pregame practices. So again, we have some stuff, kind of ready right now that we haven't yet shown. The hope is that you're not in that position at the end of games. But the subbing, some of the box strategy stuff, like I think that's kind of a fairly widespread thing that teams just try to utilize at various times. I don't care who gets the credit for any of this kind of stuff. I just want us to play at a high level and hopefully try to go 2 for 2 here.
So I've hit you with a question about Archers D. I hit you about sub games and in the middle of the field. Now just straight up 6-on-6 offense question for you. What's the key to limiting the Archers from scoring 6-on-6 goals? If you had to give us one, I'm sure there's a lot that you could throw at us, but if you had to give us one, what would be one thing that you guys are going to make sure you're emphasizing?
Playing their two-man stuff well and really trying to eliminate the two ball. Between Schreiber, LeClaire, and O'Keefe in particular, I think those guys are legitimate stretch shooters. So I'll give you two. How's that?
Perfect. Bang for our buck here, Coach. I'll leave you off with this, Coach. You've been very generous with your time here leading up to the championship weekend. Coach, it'd be remiss of us not to harp on the importance of Kieran and Michael throughout these both postseasons, really, and this run back to the title game here. Just how much of a luxury is it to have both Kieran as kind of this mentor in this two quarterback system with Michael and Michael's speed to blaze by defenses like this? Just what's it been like just seeing them go and step up their games really in September here?
I love those guys both. I mean, obviously just as people, but I love having two legitimate dodging attackmen. I think it's a little bit of a pick your poison thing. And then it's kind of what I was saying about us defensively earlier between Sabia and Randall. You have two really legitimate kind of number one cover guys. And then you have Burnsy as kind of the, let's call him the quarterback, the glue guy, whatever term you want to throw around. But I think we have a very similar kind of attack unit right now. So you have two real dodging threats, and then you have Ethan Walker, who does not get the credit that he deserves, but he's having an unbelievable year, and he's the perfect complement to those two guys. So Kieran, as a captain, as an elder statesman, as a husband and a dad, he's kind of been around the block a few times. Then you have a couple young bucks that are following his lead, but they're awfully talented there as well. And I think we got a couple middies who can win some matchups here too. So I like how we're coming together here offensively, but again, we're going to have to be at our best against a Coach Retsch defense with a few really good players and obviously great systems. So it should be a fun one here.
Absolutely, Coach. Thank you again for your time on the PLL Happy Hour podcast. Coach Copeland, good luck on championship weekend here.
All thanks, right, Coach. I appreciate it, guys. Good to
you
see
too.
You both.
Appreciate right. it. And we now welcome on the head coach of the number one seeded Archers Lacrosse Club, Coach Chris Bates. How you doing?
Great. Good to see you guys.
Thanks for joining the PLL Happy Hour podcast in the run-up to the championship game. And, Coach, you just got to start right there. The semifinal drought, or the championship drought, really, the semifinal hurdle, you finally got over it. What's kind of the sense of relief was kind of the first emotion you gave post game? Just what's the feeling finally getting that over that hurdle to the championship game now?
Wow, you've used the word twice, finally, right? I mean, it's been 4 years. We've, you know, from the jump here, you know, beginning of you know, the Archers organization, year in, year out, we've, you know, set the goal to win it year in, year out, and feel like, or have felt like, you know, we've had, you know, we've kind of had the goods or had as much of a chance as anybody, and you know, come up obviously a little bit short. You know, so for us, you know, I saw my reaction, you know, being interviewed after the game. I just had a smile on my face and, you know, just happy for our guys and happy to be able to continue to play together. But there is a little bit of a sense of relief. I'd be lying if I said otherwise. But now it's, you know, just kind of back to work and business as usual, and the job's not done. So, you know, we got a little bit of time, but we're excited for, you know, a chance to get after this thing. And you know, it's nice. It's in Philly too. So we're looking forward to it.
Job's not done. Exactly right. But how gratifying is it? And this might be a better question after the championship game, should a certain result happen, but just how gratifying is it just to see the offseason moves kind of pay off into getting over that semifinal hurdle for the first time?
It was a hard offseason in lots of ways, right? I mean, we had a core group of guys here, you know, some of the best players and best leaders I've ever been around, you know, frankly. And I said it, you know, maybe via social media, you know, it's been an honor, you know, to be a part of, you know, kind of a shared mission with guys like Scott Ratliff and Marcus Holman and Will and Gitz and Dominique and Moose, you know. So, you know, it was not an easy transition, but one we felt like, you know, with the onset of free agency and with where some guys were in their careers, that this was just the opportunity where we had to make some fundamental changes. So, you know, gratifying is a good word, you know, to see, you know, Brett, you know, play as well as he has throughout the season and play well in the playoffs, you know, certainly is, you know, reinforces the work he put into it, but then just the belief in, you know, kid from St. Bonnie's and you know, folks knew about him, but, you know, he's proven himself to be a big time player. So, you know, I think free agent acquisitions and draft, you know, I think we've done pretty well there and gotten great production. So, and then the core guys who return, you know, our locker room was shaped a little bit differently, you know, and things just, you know, have come together pretty nicely just in terms of what that dynamic is and frankly what the, you know, the on-field product. You know, we've had success in the regular season, you know, in our 4 years prior to this season. But again, it's to your point, it's nice to kind of get over the hump and be gratified that, you know, this group, you know, has taken us to a next level.
Coach, you hit on a number of things we want to kind of dive into in a second here, but just a quick must ask, if you will, and then we'll carry on with the rest of the interview. But just a status update of one of your better players, Connor Fields, went down early in that semifinal game, one of your leading scorers this season. Just what's the outlook heading into the championship game?
Yeah, I'm being very honest here. We don't know yet. You know, the MRI – you know, just basically happened. So, you know, Connor was in a lot of pain and it's a tough injury. It's one potentially that he can come back from. It just depends on the grade of sort of the AC sprain. So, you know, we're a little bit on edge just because Connor's had such a great season and he's such a core part of not only our offense, but our team. So it was a hard moment and, you know, we're sort of crossing our fingers, but, you know, we really don't know yet.
So kind of specifically, you know, we've mentioned getting over the hump and in the championship. One underlying storyline of that is doing it as the one seed and, you know, having to manage the bye. Now you're tasked with doing it again, right? It will end up being two games within, I don't know the exact math, but probably about a month period, right? What have you guys done, you know, within your group to kind of bridge those gaps with the bye weeks and make sure that obviously you guys are ready to roll come championship game and that you were ready to roll on Long Island?
No, it's a great question. And we're still kind of trying to formulate what we can and can't do or what makes sense for us, you know, sort of going forward. I thought we did a good job in Boston, you know, we sort of advocated for both a Friday and a Saturday practice, which the league agreed to. I just thought we wanted to try to maximize the time as best we could. So we had kind of a typical walkthrough practice on Friday, and then Saturday we just tried to dial it up. You know, we scripted offensive plays. We tried to make it as much a scrimmage and live competition as we could. So, you know, we stretched separately, the O and the D. We kept the clock. We, you know, marked the field more so than we normally do in practice. And I think guys appreciate it. We competed. I forget how many possessions we had. I think it was 16 possessions, like 4 per quarter. Then we had 5 timeout plays. And then I think we had maybe 7 extra man up, man down plays, and just tried to make it as game-like as we could. So I think guys appreciated that, because pro practices are typically a little bit, you know, being a college coach forever, you know, pro practices drive you nuts a little bit. They're a little bit light, you know, which is fun, but, you know, they're also the night before a game, so there's only so much you can do. I thought that helped us. We did some team building activities. We had a nice meal together, and just tried to, you know, sort of, you know, build those bonds that you know, really just create the fabric of a team and take advantage of that time. So I thought it helped us. And then, you know, we're just trying to figure out what going forward can you know, serve us well to make sure, on, like you say, 10 days from now, however long, you know, September 24th is, that you know, we're mentally ready, we're physically ready, and you know, opening faceoff, we're you know, firing on as many cylinders as we can possibly be.
Coach, on the offensive end, Grant Ament puts up a career high at the professional level, 8 points. Of course, that open net 2-pointer helped pad his stat a little bit, but a great overall performance from your first overall pick in the 2020 draft, right? And then 2021, he's the attackman of the year. This season, the 32-second shot clock, I think it's probably better to get a downhill dodger right in there with Moore and LeClaire. You kind of have rotated in there through injuries. What was it like to see Ament take that? What were the conversations going into the week like in terms of, hey, you're going to be down at attack this week, you got your spot back? And seeing him kind of take this opportunity and run with it.
Well, if I'm being honest, that wasn't really the plan going in. You know, we wanted to get Matt going and thought bringing him from the box. And the first play was actually kind of called for Matt just to try to get his legs back under him. You know, so Matt didn't play in Boston that practice week we just talked about. But, you know, we were going to mix it. We were going to continue to mix and match, frankly, you know, with Grant getting a handful of the first possessions. And then he just took advantage of the opportunity and, you know, had a pick set for him, you know, drives left handed and puts it at the back of the net. And then, you know, he's obviously just got great vision, and the game kind of opened up, and he looked confident with the ball on the stick. As we're moving off ball, we're spaced, and he just did a great job distributing it. So, you know, we kind of went and kept him down there just because it was working. And then obviously Fieldsy goes down, and, you know, it made sense. It made sense just to kind of keep him there. It just felt natural. But what I would say is he's been great, right? His production was down a little bit early. You know, we had very honest conversations, you know, just about where we could try to get, you know, the most value out of him. And we thought, coming from the box, operating against a short stick, inverting, but then also playing some two man and getting him on different areas of the field would just help build some confidence. And on the flip side, putting Matt down there, he had 7 goals in 4 games. Like Matt Moore's a big time player, you know, and Matt's a tough matchup. So, you know, it made sense. And I've heard, you know, you can hear Kark talk about his natural position and, you know, basically saying, you know, what were you guys doing? And it's a combination of things. And, you know, as a coach, you got to make some hard decisions, but at the end of the day, I couldn't be more happy, as I've said, you know, for Grant, because he's been a great teammate. He's continued to work, continued to care, you know, and been a valuable leader and player throughout. So it's nice to see him get rewarded for doing the right things.
Absolutely. Just to touch on those hard conversations, not to reveal kind of the private conversations that you had, but the knock against Grant that opposing defenses would come in and make him kind of a shoot first attackman, right? Like you mentioned he is a gifted feeder, but seeing him turn that corner and bury it lefty, just were those kind of some of the things that you were getting at in the lead up?
Yeah, I'm not, you know, giving away too many secrets. You know, we, for him, again, being at the midfield, there's some different dodging angles that we would talk about, but you know, we wanted him to find his way. When he's the attackman of the year, he was getting to the front of the net and just playing courageously. And you know, I just think with the injury thing and just not feeling as explosive, you know, he got away from that a little bit. And then, you know, my reminders to him were just that, like, you know, keeping life simple, like taking angles, you know, doesn't, you know, need to be all or nothing, but you got to put a threat on a defense such that they're going to, you know, either slide or hedge. And then you, if you just bump the ball forward, you've done your job. So, you know, we just kind of kept it simple and just, you know, tried to reinforce all the positive things that he did, you know, that he was doing, and then challenge him to keep, you know, taking next steps. So, you know, he and I have had, you know, great conversations and lots of dialogue. And, you know, I appreciate him as a leader on our team and as a player. So it was good, obviously, to see again that, you know, that paid off for him and for us, obviously.
And as a ripple of that, like, kind of a similar question, but Trey LeClaire, right? He's been asked to move around a lot as well, playing offense, playing defense, going to attack, coming through the box, whatever it is. Can you talk a little bit about him and how, you know, as those personnel changes has happened, what he's been able to give the Archers this season?
Yeah, talk about a dude that just can do a little bit of everything and really has. You know, early in the season, he was playing some more defense and really doing a good job. You know, we started to put him on wings of faceoffs and, you know, allow him to get up and down a little bit. You know, when Matt went down, we kind of, you know, stayed with the theory that if Matt comes back, you know, we were going to bump him, you know, primarily back down to attack. So we wanted to keep Grant, at the midfield to get more acclimated and comfortable, you know, all the while trying to continue to stay interchangeable. But, you know, Trey then playing attack where he had played in college at some points, you know, was such a great riding attackman, you know, just did some good things down there for us. But, you know, anytime we win, it feels like Trey has a good game. And, you know, he's kind of like that chameleon wherever you need him. And I remember Coach Myers saying it. He's like, we'd like to put him on the wings of faceoffs. We just, you know, in our college scheme and, you know, what our roster looks like, we just can't and don't, you know, sort of need him there. But that always stuck in my brain. And, you know, even Saturday, Trey picks up a couple big ground balls. He's really good between the lines, you know, continue to see his game develop and him give us production. I tip my cap because he's just done a little bit of everything. And, you know, geez, he's a big, strong dodger. He gets his hands free. But it's the little plays like ground balls and riding that and playing defense that go a little bit unnoticed. But, you know, that's what winners do. And that's what, you know, we get from a contribution standpoint from him. So he's been as valuable as anybody, really.
Coach, and I love thinking about the league and this kind of 5-year scope here in terms of your club and how close you guys seemingly have been with how great you guys have been each regular season, especially on the defensive end. And excuse the long-winded nature of this kind of 2-part question here, but the start of the league where it's kind of this movement of building around a defense to combat the Zed and Rambos of the league where they're at this elite level to kind of transitioning to this speed kills with Sours and in the championship game. What's that transition been like? And kind of just what's it been like seeing the defense play their best ball late here and kind of not carry the team, but kind of lead the charge the last month or so of the season?
No, I you know, will always take the opportunity to tip my cap to Tony Resch, who's, you know, as good as anybody in the game on that end of the field and you know, with some help with Coach Cav. But, you know, he's been the mainstay. He is our captain and leader down there and, you know, does a great job year in, year out of gelling a group so that there's like-mindedness, guys are playing together, you go in with a game plan, and you execute, right? And, you know, we've got good players that helps, right? So, you know, when you start with Graham Hossick, who in my mind is the best one out there, who can cover, you know, a quick guy and also cover a big, strong guy. Like, you know, Haas is a freak of an athlete and just a wonderful player in every way. You know, Matt McMahon's been with us for 5 years and doesn't get the credit he deserves for just being a constant stalwart on that end of the field. And then having,
Warren to interrupt, Beckham, Coach, sorry to do this, but just holding Westberg to 3 touches, Matt McMahon, the primary kind of off-ball defender there, just that was insane.
it's crazy, and it's a credit to everybody around him because we didn't, the plan clearly was not to slide if he didn't need to, and we would switch and support. But, Wes is obviously Wes, and the ball gets in his stick, it's going to the back of the net. So Matt did a great job, but has done a great job over the course of frankly, 5 years. And like I said, Warren did a really nice job on Rob, who's an all-time great. And then Jared has picked up and played really well. And Cam Wires has played well as a pole. And really the unsung guys, it's heartbreaking for Treasy to not be able to continue to play, but we sort of played in his honor in some ways. And Chow did a really good job. But, the two rookies have been outstanding. I mean, that's the hardest position in the game. You constantly get picked on. It's like a cornerback in football. Like if you can lock that down a little bit, it's just going to help the rest of your defense. So Connor Marr and Piper have been really good. And to be rookies and to play at that high level throughout the year is really a credit to those guys. And then Dobber backstops us and has done a great job. So it starts with Tony, has great players. And then I think, we've sort of executed game plans pretty well. So let's hope we got one more in us to slow down a very powerful Water Dogs offense.
So I actually have to tip my cap here a little bit. I've been working on some Archer's film review, and over the course of that have developed a bit of a love for Warren Jeffrey. Can you talk a little bit about your guys' decision-making on the matchups there to put Warren on Rob? Because from the perspective going into it, outside of the fact that in the first game you guys had Hasek on Garnsey and that same matchups, it would have seemed that Hasek would guard Rob Pinnell, right? Two greats on greats. But you guys elect to use Warren in that role and Hasek on Garnsey, and obviously it worked out well in both of those games against the Redwoods. Can you talk a little bit about that decision and what went into that?
Sure. I mean, you pick your poisons, right? I mean, those two guys and their offense, frankly, I thought the Redwoods did a really good job kind of finding themselves and shortening their bench a little bit. But, again, you're trying to play to your own strengths and take away your opponent's strengths. Warren, Warren's not going to go out sideline to sideline and chase you. He's smart enough to kind of wait for you. And, I was watching the game earlier and you just watch a couple cuts and he's just, he's patient. He knows his strengths, which are his size and strength and patience. And I thought, he just played very much under control. So, against Rob, who can beat you a bunch of different ways, if you try to at least meet him where he's most dangerous and kind of at least take away some of the variability of what he's doing, it becomes a little bit more predictable. And I thought he just played a very disciplined game. And then Haas can play a little bit of everybody, right? I mean, he is a freak athlete. So he was physical, and has the feet to be able to guard Garnsey as well as anybody, right? Nobody totally takes Ryder out of the game. But Haas can stick with you. And then when you expose your stick, he's going to get a trail check or he's going to, do something to be disruptive. So, and then overall, I think just the nature of our defense, we've slid on time, right? I don't think we've slid unnecessarily. I think we've become better at slide decisions. So, all those guys working them together, I thought, have evolved and really done a good job so that when we slide, we're coming quick and we're being disruptive. And I thought, that's where we've really, seen some growth at the tail end of the season.
Coach, you mentioned the rookie D-mids, Connor Marr, Piper Bond, just falling out this season. No Luttrell and Challen steps up, but having really 4 rookies likely to play a key role in this. Cam Wires has been I didn't expect the transition to pole to kind of go this smoothly as a primarily a close defenseman at Loyola and for Team Canada, but the headliner is Mike Sisselberger, right? The coming up against this Water Dogs team who's been innovative at the faceoff X pretty much all season with this new 32-second shot clock rule. How do you expect after two games going against this Water Dogs outfit for Sisselberger to what kind of areas are you looking to kind of coach him up on in the lead up here?
Floodgates are open, coach. Here comes the scout question.
There it goes. I got you. I see how you're trying to slip it in here late. I got you. Excuse me. The whole face-off thing's been a learning process for all of us, and you know, I've said all along, you know, we're thrilled with what Sis gives us week in, week out. So, you know, our approach to it is based on our belief in him and frankly his production. And I think the Water Dogs do a really good job, right? You know, they mix and match a little bit. Zach's obviously unique up there, but they're as well coached and their strategies are sound that it's a little bit of a chess match just in terms of how you put pressure, where your outlets are, how you use the box. We hope we're up to the challenge. We expect maybe a wrinkle or two from them, but you know, at the end of the day, you know, it's see ball, get ball, and then get ball to the offense, right? I mean, so, you know, Sis needs to control the ball if they're not necessarily fighting for it, with a long pole. And then you got to handle pressure, and that's always a challenge, right? I mean, Sis as a rook, you know, teams have thrown some different things at them, you know, so to be able to handle pressure and then obviously, just distribute it and then get off the field so that we can maximize our time is going to be critical for us. So there's a little bit of a chess match that goes on, you know, sort of addedly just with how the Water Dogs play it. So, we'll prepare for eventualities and then just kind of, you know, as the game goes, if we have to adjust. But Sis, to your point, has been awesome. He gives us great energy. He's just such a competitor, and he's obviously skilled at his craft in terms of, you know, quick hands, controlling the ball. But he's been a really good, stick protector and distributor of the ball. So, you know, again, we've got to support him and then, you know, he's got to deliver it. So, he's had a great year, you know, learning as he goes. He's not used to losing, right? You know, cause he never lost at college, you know, he's X percent. So you're just not used to that. And, you know, you can see his growth and there's still, you know, room for development there too. But, it's the full game. We're trying to, you know, we're trying to coach the full possession, whether you win or lose. And there's a lot to that. So, it's been an interesting year for us to, you know, sort of see how to adjust and develop as it's gone on.
Safe to say you've done pretty well with it being the, number one efficient offense, defense in both 52 and 32 second shot clocks. You guys have been awesome this year.
Well, I give credit, you know, Coach Cav has done a really good job and, you know, we've tried to sub quickly as best you can and just have a mental approach to, you know, to take advantage of it because, you know, if you're going to win it, you want to get a great shot off. And I've said that from the jump here. I'm like, we want to make you stop us at least for a good push or two, you know, a shot or two shots. And if we can do that, we feel like with our offense, you know, give us X amount of possessions, we're hoping to at least cash in on them and get back to the X again and try to do it another time.
So Kevin kind of kicked off the Water Dogs questions with a specific one going into the face-offs. I'm going to ask a more generic one. Like when you watch the Water Dogs, what jumps off the page to you?
They play together. They're very well coached. You watch them week in, week out and they don't beat themselves. They know who they are. You know, they play to their strengths. You know, there's really no weakness. You know, this is a different week for us and a different opponent. You know, we're 1-1 against those guys. They both have been great games, but they come at you a bunch of different ways. It's a sound roster top to bottom. Defensively, they're anchored by a really good goalie who plays a pretty unique style. But those guys are playing well together as a unit. Their short sticks are very good. You know, they do what they do at the faceoff X and do that well. And then offensively, you know, they're just talented, right? I mean, you know, they talk about, you know, Michael and Kieran being the stalwarts, but, you know, geez, Connor Kelly is as good as anybody. you know, Jack Hanna, I have a ton of respect for. You know, he beats you a bunch of different ways, plays with confidence and a great pace. And you know, I had the privilege of coaching Zach, so I know all that he brings to the game. So, you know, all over the field, they're just, you know, they play together. They play with a little bit of a chip on the shoulder, but they're smart. And you know, it's gonna be a great, you know, it's gonna be a great championship game for sure.
And you mentioned those previous matchups this season. Have you guys already had the chance to kind of get together and digest those game films and kind of look at it and start to look at how the Archers can do things better for, you know, this championship game?
Not a ton, to be honest with you. Yeah, tonight we have our Zoom, and typically we look backwards at least a little bit and you know, talk about what we could have done and then just value the things that we did do. We, you know, we have a whatever it takes segment where it's, you know, they're just those sort of plays that are, you know, big ground balls or big hits or on time slides or just those, you know, those separating plays, I think, that, you know, help you win games that maybe go a little bit unnoticed. We try to highlight those. But specifically for those guys, you know, we know each other. It's not like you're going to reinvent yourself. But if there's a nuance or something that you can tweak or you're certainly looking for any kind of edge you can find. But no, we haven't really, you know, dug into the, and again, probably because we have 2 weeks. If it were a game this Sunday, obviously we'd have a little bit of a, you know, different urgency, but you know, we got a little bit of time. So no, I haven't looked at them a great deal yet. Frankly, we were traveling, so didn't watch them, you know, haven't even watched their Cannons game yet, but obviously we'll do so shortly.
It's a, I was about to say it's a snore fest, but it's, I mean, it was a quite a lopsided, as you know, the coach.
I'll give you a hint. They scored a lot in transition and early offense. A lot.
That's what I hear.
Just the frenetic style of play that they play. Like, you almost have to just, like, amp your guys up to, like, guys, you're going to face a lot of pressure. You're going to, like, be running between the lines a lot. In between these arcs, how important is that game in between the arcs against a team like the Water Dogs?
That's playoff lacrosse. You know, you have to own the paint, right? Like we've talked about, you have to own the paint. Like offensively, you have to get there to score, and defensively, you can't let high percentage shots go. But you know, those between the lines plays, everybody's so skilled in this league, and Water Dogs specifically, where if you get an odd man rush and they have a, you know, 3-on-2 up top with, you can't afford to screw too many of those up because they're going to cash in on them. So, you know, we regularly, you know, you hear all coaches in a huddle, like, don't give up anything, you know, offensive coaches, don't give up anything going the other direction. You know, you preach that constantly, you know, each week our guys can be sure that the one time we didn't do that in the previous game, there's going to be a clip of, you know, hey, the top three have got to get back. Like, I don't care if it's an attackman. I don't care if it's Amet, you know, or Fields or Mac, like, go do your job, go get back in the hole and, you know, knuckle up and play. So, especially this, you know, this championship, that's going to be important.
Coach, throughout the season, we've kind of talked about the point you mentioned at the start of this talk here, just with six original kind of founding Archers leaving in this off season with Tom Shriver being the solo captain of this club, being the leader in the locker room, just how calming of a presence is he through this whole season and the level of play to become the first really at the field professional level, three-time MVP. And we saw the class kind of with his acceptance speech and everything. Just how nice is it to kind of form that one-on-one coach to solo captain relationship this season?
Yeah, it's amazing that, you know, when you look back, that it's, you know, it's Tom, it's Ryan, and it's Matt are really the original Archers, aside from the coaching staff. That's it. And that's crazy to think about that turnover. But, you know, Tom, I don't, you know, we could do a sole, a podcast solely on, you know, talking about him. But, you know, at the end of the day, he is all that, right? I mean, he's just a dynamic player, you know, but just a dynamic competitor, really. So when at big moments, you can count on him to make big plays, you know, but he also lets the game breathe, to the extent where, you know, he's very comfortable, you know, obviously feeding because he's a great feeder, but letting other guys take their runs and getting guys, you know, you need contributions from everybody. So he runs most every shift, you know, he doesn't take a whole lot of rest. but he does a lot of the little things also, you know, big ground balls and you know, not afraid to set picks. You know, the only time he gets in trouble is when there are times where he tries to do too much with his feeding, and we just sort of remind him, hey, we don't need Brett Favre taking chances here. We just need simplicity at times. But, you know, for me, it's, you know, very blessed, obviously, to coach him at Princeton for 4 years and stay close with him and have had the opportunity through, you know, the outset of the PLL to coach him now in year five. So I couldn't respect anybody more. He's a wonderful human being. He's as sound a leader and as respected a leader as anybody. And, you know, to kind of continue to see him grow and develop, you know, he's just got his fingerprints all over our roster, all over our locker room. And, you know, guys want to play for him and with him. And you know, he's just one of those rare, special athletes. So it's been a treat, obviously.
He is definitely rare. Another one that I would say is also pretty rare is a guy that you've had a longstanding relationship with, and so does he, Ryan Ambler. We actually did a recent feature here from Matt Kinnear where he deemed him your favorite player's favorite player, which I thought was quite fitting and certainly fits for me as well. He's one of those guys that, like, you can't help but have a huge respect for. Can you talk a little bit about obviously your relationship with him, but specifically him as a player, and like, he's done a million things to be able to stay in the league and stay effective. What does he kind of give to the Archers offense specifically, and, you know, outside of just the relationship, the on the field stuff with Ryan?
Yeah. You know, and I would comment, I've known Ryan since he's been probably 7 or 8 years old. His brother Colin played for me at Drexel. His dad's an all-time leading scorer at Drexel, so I've known the Amblers forever, and you know, was excited to be able to coach Ryan at Princeton and see him, you know, take on a bunch of different roles there, because he played with Tom, with Kip Orban, with Mike McDonald, with, you know, really a high-functioning college offense. And what Ryan does as well as anybody in the game is do whatever it takes to be successful. He plays like the house is on fire, right? He comes on the field going 90 miles an hour and says, cover me. I'm going to make your life difficult, right? So his athletic IQ is through the roof, and he'll do whatever it takes. You know, if he's got to get to the front of the net, he will, you know, so he can shoot it. He's got great vision. Some of the feeds he's had this year, you know, just with eyes in the back of his head, but just, you know, his energy to be really a difficult cover. But then, yeah, it's all those little things, flashing hard and opening up lanes for other guys. He's as good a pick setter as there is in the game, you know, so if I'm a guy that has the ball on my stick, I want Ryan around me, because he's going to be savvy and effective around how he, you know, tries to set me up unselfishly, right? So I think our guys love playing with him. And he's just really developed to have a great voice and be a great leader. And he's somebody I can't imagine not playing with, right? He just makes everybody else around him better. So it's been nice to see him start now to get even that much more respect. You know, Cole Kirst has done a great job. You know, Ryan is the teammate of the year in our book, right? Ryan's done it for so many years. I just thought, you know, that was a glad that he got the respect to be nominated, and really we just wanted him to win just because of all that he brings. So I appreciate that question.
Coach, how many Philly guys are on your roster? So it's you, Coach Rash, Grant, Ryan Ambler, Matt Moore. Who am I missing?
That's it for the original guys. You know, Mac O'Keefe coaches in Pennsylvania now, Gettysburg. That doesn't really count, but, you know,
we'll sort of give a little bit of love there,
but no, that's it. So we got a little bit of a Philly flavor. It's, you know, for me, having been here for 30 some odd years, I'm clearly a Philly guy now. So it's got a little extra juice for us to be able to play, you know, what should be a great environment, right, at Subaru Park. So can't wait.
Yeah, so it's not quite in Philadelphia, Chester, PA, but all intents and purposes, we'll call it Philadelphia. Coach, you've been super generous with your time here. Just, we'll leave you off with this. What does the Philadelphia lacrosse community mean to you?
Oh, wow, that's a great question. You know, I've been here for a while, right? And even I joked when I was at Princeton that that was a northern suburb of Philadelphia. Princeton folks didn't always want to hear that, but you know, in my mind, it was true. So, you know, I've been here for a while. You know, dug in as a coach back early in the day at Archbishop Ryan and then Drexel, and built wonderful relationships, and frankly, take, you know, just great pride in being a guy who pulls an oar in this community lacrosse wise, and, you know, becoming an older dog, and then seeing guys like Grant and Matt and Michael Sowers and Sabia and all these young guys, you know, stay in very close touch with former teammates and former players. So it's an awesome community. I wouldn't want to be anywhere else. Just good people, good competitors, and you know, just kind of want to do my part to see it continue. So it's, you know, back with the old Wings days, those guys are still, you know, some of my nearest and dearest friends, and competed for championships with Philadelphia on my chest, and you know, to do it at Drexel and then Princeton and now be back, obviously haven't been at Episcopal. You know, it's in my blood, and it's a special community to be a part of.
Coach, thank you so much for joining the PLL Happy Hour podcast. We're looking forward to seeing you up there in Philadelphia, September 24th. Be sure to watch the PLL championship. The Archers look to become the fourth champion? War Dogs, Chaos Whiffs of the PLL, and against the defending champs, the Dogs, as we mentioned. So, Coach, thanks again for joining. If you like what you heard, leave a like, review, and tell a friend. Be on the lookout for more Inside Lacrosse podcasts. And looking forward to it.
Thanks,
Coach. Thank you, Coach.
Yeah, been a ton of fun. Go Archers. See you guys.